Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Friday to you. It's 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. No, it was over there. Is your microphone working? Not yet. She's going to play with some buttons.
It's not working.
Yeah, now you are.
I can't hear you, though.
Yeah. Oh, I can hear you.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'll work on it.
Okay. She'll work on it. Which is okay because we have a few minutes because actually here at the start of the show, I'm going to play some audio I recorded the other afternoon. It was interesting. I got a phone call and said, hey, would you be interested in interviewing Speaker of the House Mike Johnson? I was like, what? Are you serious? And they're like, yeah, no. Celeste Malloy's people had set up an interview with Celeste and Speaker Mike Johnson. It was not during showtime. I had to pre-record it, off the air. But I am going to play it for you, and I'm going to play it right now. Again, this is Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, and Celeste Malloy. I talked to them, I think it was Wednesday afternoon. Here it is. All right, I'm Andy here. I'm with Mike Johnson, who is Speaker of the House of Representatives for the United States of America. Pretty cool, Mike. Did you ever think you'd be here?
I didn't, Andy. It's not a job I ever aspired to. It's been kind of surreal, to be honest.
I think you even said when they were first talking about it, you're like, no, I don't want it. But you got it, whether you want it or not, huh?
You're right. That's how it devolved. But I tell you what, I'm very clear-eyed about this, very sober-minded. We're in a very challenging time for the country, and we've got to guide the nation through this. And I am absolutely confident we're going to be able to do that.
Oh, that's awesome. Also with us is Celeste Malloy, Representative District 2 here in Utah. Celeste, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us on, Andy.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to me today. A lot of people want to talk about the budget, and obviously that's foremost on a lot of people's minds. Mike and Celeste, we'll start with the Speaker Johnson. Just tell us a little bit about your thoughts of what's going on with the budget and where we need to go.
Yeah, great question. You know, we had this big government funding dilemma a couple of weeks ago, and we had to deal with our reality. That's a tough one right now, right? As conservatives in Congress, we're really outnumbered. We only control one chamber, one house. Of course, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats run the Senate, and Joe Biden runs the White House, right? So we're over here in the House, and on top of that, we have the smallest majority in U.S. history, Andy. We have a one-vote margin, which means we can only lose one Republican on anything we try to advance. So it's an extremely difficult needle to thread every day. So what we've got to do, because we're not in a position to throw Hail Mary passes on every play, right? We got to do 3 yards in a cloud of dust. This is inch by inch up the field, incremental wins to get the next first down and keep going. And here's the thing. We know that if we're able to govern and do this, we will grow the House majority in the fall in the election in November. We're going to win the Senate and win the White House as well. And we're going to be in a lot better mood in January than we are right now. But right now we go through this valley and we do it step by step. And the appropriations process is one of those. We got some good wins in the bills, but we also got a few things we didn't like. But that's the nature of divided government. And we're going to keep moving that ball incrementally every single day.
And let me just say, being a lifelong sportscaster, I do appreciate your sports analogy, too.
I knew you would. I knew you would.
I really do appreciate it. I don't know if Celeste enjoys that as much as I do, but for sure.
Just enjoy the idea of moving in the right direction. Whatever sports ball analogy you want to use, I'm with you.
Awesome. Thank you, Celeste. I appreciate that. This country, I think, at times feels... You know, I've had an opportunity. I've gone on some different public situations, and even though the minority, some of the crazy, wild minority left is so loud, I still feel like America is the Christian right. It's people who love their families, want their families to succeed, want to pursue the American dream, Mike. And I from what I've read about you, I feel like you probably feel the same way. Is that true?
I absolutely do. You know, I talk a lot about the 7 core principles of American conservatism. I believe in individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. And, you know, we talk about those in terms of sort of like policy positions and political principles. But look, the truth is, Andy, you know, those things are grounded in eternal truth. And our nation was built upon a Judeo-Christian heritage. It's our foundation. what makes us different, exceptional, unique, and the strongest nation in the history of the world. We cannot abandon those foundations. And that's the battle we're in right now. I mean, every day. It's not even really Republicans versus Democrats anymore. It's two competing visions about who we are as a people and a nation. And we have got to stay tied to those moorings, or we'll be abandoning something at our peril. And that's the fight we have here every day.
You mentioned the very, very slim majority you have in the House and, of course, the problem with the Senate and the presidency. Do you ever feel like you're just banging your head against a brick wall? Do you ever feel like, how can we ever get anything done?
Well, it can be a frustrating exercise. And Celeste Malloy is, you know, she's here in Washington representing Utah's 2nd District like a champion every day. She's trying to advance Utah's values. I'm trying to advance Louisiana's values, the people's values, you know. But, yeah, you have this kind of radical progressive element in Congress now that is openly opposed to the things that we all believe in and that we're trying to advance. And it is a very frustrating exercise some days to be in this tiny majority. We can't wait to get to November to grow this group because we'll be in a much better position to advance our principles much further up the field.
Yeah, well said,
Andy,
there.
Can I interrupt you, Andy, and tell you something about Speaker Johnson?
Sure.
People ask me all the time, what's the most surprising thing about being in Congress? And the answer I usually give is that when I got here, I expected it to be a lot more contentious. And there's definitely a lot of contention. But Speaker Johnson was brand new when I got here. And one of the things that struck me very first about him is that we talk all the time when we're behind closed doors as Republicans about the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. He always talks about the need to pray for our enemies. And I just think most people, to your point, that are sort of still Christian-based and want to know that the people they've elected to lead them have values would sleep a lot better at night knowing that the Speaker of the House talks to other members of the House regularly about praying for our enemies and trying to do what's best for our constituents.
That's amazing stuff. And I love to hear it. You know, I went on a cruise last year out of Galveston, just down to Mexico. And I was expecting, you know, the party cruise and wild people and, you know, everything you hear so loud about the, you know, the LGBTQ and everything like that. And what I found instead was a ship full of Americans who believed in God, who loved their families and just wanted to have a good time with their families. That's what I believe America is.
I think you're right, Andy. And I've been 23 states in the last several weeks, because the Speaker of the House has to go around the country and campaign with our candidates, our incumbents, and everybody who's on that ballot. And I'm telling you, whether I'm out west, the Midwest, you know, Long Island, Deep South, doesn't matter. That same sentiment is felt all over this country. People still, in their hearts, they still believe in those values. And they understand that, as the founders warned us, religion and morality are the indispensable supports of a republic like ours, and we have to maintain them. And I think that most of the country still agrees with us.
In God we trust, absolutely. Yeah.
That's right.
I know, Speaker Johnson, you have to go. They told me you got 8 minutes with him, and so I'm gonna let you go and take care of business. But thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us.
Thank you, and thanks for sending Celeste Malloy to us. The entire Utah delegation is fantastic. These are hardworking folks. They make no fuss. They just get the job done, and we're so grateful for them.
Agreed. Thank you, Speaker Johnson. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Now, Celeste, we're going to hang on to you for a few more minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, I've got about 4 more minutes.
4 minutes. Okay, well, we'll take what we can get for sure. You touched on a little bit about what one of the things that surprised you so much is how many actually really good people there are in Washington, D.C. And we hear about all the slick willies, all the slick people, that, you know, the almost slimy people in Washington, D.C. How can the good people overcome the slick, the ones that, you know, we're kind of worried about?
Yeah, I think I've already said what the answer is, but I'll make sure I'm clear about it. I think the people who are here and want to do good things need to remember that we're accountable to a higher power than ourselves. What corrupts people in Washington, D.C. is when they start to think they have all the answers. When they're angry all the time and when they're sure that they're smarter than everybody else, then they're highly corruptible. When you know that you answer to a power that's higher than yourself, you have to stay humble. You have to stay flexible. You've got to admit when you're wrong and change directions when you've been wrong. And I really think that's the answer, is staying a values-based Christian culture where we know that we answer to a God who's bigger than whatever's happening in Washington, D.C.
Well said, Celeste. Let's talk about the budget for just a minute. You voted to approve the budget. Can you tell us what your thinking was?
Yeah. To Speaker Johnson's point, we're in a very divided government. So we had three choices. We could pass another continuing resolution, we could pass a budget, or we could shut down the government. I've consistently voted against continuing resolutions. It's not the way we're supposed to govern, and it keeps all of the policy priorities from the last Congress in place, and I didn't like those policy priorities. The third option, shutting down the government, can be effective when you have a really united front, and you can say, we're willing to shut down the government until we get X, Y, and Z. We didn't have that. We didn't have the votes. We didn't have a clear message. And I looked at this budget that Speaker Johnson went and fought to keep our conservative wins in after we passed these 12 appropriations bills out of committee, and I decided I'd rather fund the government with these cuts in place and move forward and keep fighting for more cuts that, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Then
that's an old football analogy.
And lose it all. Yeah. I'm going to get myself in trouble here with the football analogies, but I'd rather get some yardage than a loss. So I decided to get the yardage and then work on the next play.
Yeah. That makes sense. Do you feel like, you know, you were talking about the three choices. Do you feel like you really had no choice and that's why you voted the way you did? Is it was this or like you said, nothing, the three, get those 3 yards if you can?
Yeah. I guess having no choice is a good way to put it. It's easy to talk about saying no. And a lot of people have asked me, why didn't you just say no? Well, saying no has consequences as well.
Yeah.
If we don't pass a budget, then we've got to deal with those consequences. Then we're looking at a shutdown. And a shutdown only works if you have a plan and if you have a certain number of votes that will stand together come what may. And we do not have that right now. We have a majority that's acting a lot like a minority, and we spend a lot of time arguing with each other. And you can't get a win out of a shutdown when you're in that scenario. And I think if we'd have gone into a shutdown, that in order to come back out of it, which we would eventually have to do, we'd have had to give in on some of the things that we now have in law, like the Hyde Amendment and the policy fixes in the military and the cuts to some of these bloated programs. So I'd rather have those things stay in place and try to get more wins this next time.
I know you've only got a minute or two left. Can you tell, is there anything you're working on right now that you're especially excited about?
Yeah, I'm excited that we are actually voting on Pfizer reform this week. That's something I've worked on the whole time I've been here.
Probably ought to explain to people what that means. What's Pfizer? I looked it up because I wasn't positive. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it's what authorizes our intelligence agencies to surveil foreigners outside the United States. But Section 702 of Pfizer has been abused by our intel agencies to gather information on Americans, which they never should have been doing. That's not something that FISA authorizes. So this is a reform to that FISA authorization to make it clear that agencies can't do that. It's actually 56 reforms, and we've got a couple of amendments. So with every bill, the devil's in the details, and how I vote on the final passage is going to depend on which amendments make it and which ones don't. But I'm excited that we're doing our job, facing this problem, and dealing with it. That's what the American people hired us to do.
Absolutely.
So I'm sorry, Andy, I'm out of time. I'd love to talk about this longer, but thank you for having us on.
Celeste, good to talk to you. Thanks for being on. That was my interview with Mike Johnson, Celeste Malloy. This whole FISA thing, and I don't pretend to be an expert on this, but President Trump, former President Trump, contends that this law was abused, this FISA thing was abused to spy on him and to make recordings and do things on him, an American citizen. That's not what the FISA law is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be a tool for the FBI to use to spy, to gather information on foreign entities. And so I think that's where, Mello, we kind of, and I know this is really deep into politics and stuff, but I think that's where I think the problem is you have a law that is intended for good, that is supposed to be used a certain way, and you would have some political parties like Donald Trump saying it was abuse. And I don't think that Mike Johnson and Celeste Malloy disagree with that it was abused, but they want to have an amendment to it to make it more specific about who it can be used against. It was, however, defeated yesterday. I can't hear you. Nope.
Now can you hear me? Yes. Oh, the other button. I'm getting it. Sorry. They change every time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy that they can spy on people and that it's legally backed up. And that got defeated, you said?
Yeah. So, well, and the thing is, it never was legal for our FBI and our CIA to spy on American citizens. That was never legal. But they were somehow using that FISA law to justify some of the spying. Well, he was talking to someone foreign, so kind of thing. And so, like I said, I'm not an expert on the topic, and I'm not going to pretend like I am. I don't know, but I do know that it, on its face, if it's used properly, I think it's a good thing for our country. But it apparently hasn't been used properly in the last 4 years or so.
Yeah, the politics have gotten really nasty.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. So, anyway, I appreciate, again, Mike Johnson, Celeste Malloy for being on the program. Of course, Celeste has a big old primary coming up with Colby Jenkins. There's a third candidate, Travis Nielsen, or something. I don't forget his name, but he has no chance to win. It's really between Jenkins and Malloy. I will say this, and somebody during the last election, somebody said, hey, you know, in southern Utah, you guys have no idea what it's like in the rest of the country as far as politics, because they get mean and they get dirty and they sling mud, as it were. And we don't do that much here in southern Utah. I feel like there's been a little bit of mudslinging in this particular election. And I'm not going to name names, but I just feel like that you know, some candidates will use partial truths to their advantage. And I don't think that's right. They'll highlight things that they, from their perspective, or even partially their perspective, and twist them and make them use them to their advantage. And I don't like that.
No.
I just think that's not cool.
And I think people in southern Utah don't appreciate that. And I don't think it would be reflected well for those people that do that.
Right. I agree. But the problem is, if you twist a half-truth in your favor and people aren't smart enough to recognize that it's not the whole truth, then you might fool some of the people, which I guess is the goal of the mudslinging type political races.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Anyway, thanks for tuning in today. 9:26 on KDXU. In a few minutes, we're going to give away the last one. Now, I got to tell you guys, okay, yesterday, guy from corporate was in town, right? One of the big shots. Guy makes the big bucks. He lives, I don't know where he lives. He lives in, you know, Portland or New York or LA, wherever you live. He came into my studio. I didn't recognize him at first. And he wanted this book. This Clay Travis book, American Playbook. He's a big Clay Travis fan. And he was with the boss, the local boss here. And the local boss was like, can't you give him this one? You have one at home. Just bring the one at home in and give that out on the air. And I said, well, how about if I give this one out that I have here in studio on the air, and I'll bring you my book tomorrow, because I've already read it. You know, no big deal. And the boss was really, the local boss here was really funny, insistent about giving this guy the book. I found out later on that guy actually left town this morning and wasn't going to be around for me to deliver the book to him. So I didn't give corporate guy the book, because I promised my listeners on this show yesterday that I had one left and I was going to give it away today.
Yeah, you've got to follow through with your word. That's integrity, Andy.
It might cost me in the long run. Maybe when next time a raise comes around and the corporate guy's like, him? No, he's the guy that wouldn't give me the book. You know, I don't know. But we did have a good discussion. He's a big BYU fan. And we had a good discussion about I have a signed basketball and football and jersey back there. So, the phone is ringing. So we're not giving the book away yet. Don't give it away yet, Mello. We're not giving the book away yet, but we will here in just a couple of minutes. Coming up on the program, I have a couple of things I think that are worth talking about, including my article of the week. I love this article. So let me preface it before we get into it. We're going to get into it after the commercial break, but the article of the week when you think of a hero, right, you think of, most of the heroes we see in movies or even your local heroes, the policemen or whatever. But you think of a hero, you think of things like courage and bravery and loyalty and those types of things. Yes, those all go into a hero, right? But what else goes into being a hero? Think about this, and we'll talk about it when we come back. A hero also has to be competent. Imagine, now let's do the opposite of that word, incompetent. Imagine if the guy that you're going to, maybe put up on a pedestal as a hero is incompetent. He's a bumbling fool. And I know Hollywood, there have been a few of those through the, Maxwell Smart comes to mind, the first one. There have been a few bumbling fool heroes along the way who somehow win accidentally. But for the most part, we want our heroes to be, yes, brave and loyal and courageous and all those things, but we also want our heroes to be competent. All right. Looks like we have a call. I was going to go to a weather break, but let's take a call first. I'm going to look at Mello's text here. Oh, you're here. All right.
It's Richard.
Yeah. Richard. Oh, Richard is one of our fun regular callers. Richard, what's going on today? Thanks for calling, my friend.
Good to hear you. Anyway, you talked to a couple representatives. I guess that was taped a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And did either one bring up about the vote they got coming up right away about the FISA court? And if we're going to put some limits on them, because right now they're pushing. This was Mike Lee. He happened to be on the other guy's station. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about the FISA court and the FBI and the whatever, all those guys want access to our information.
Well,
carte blanche without a court order, nothing. So if you're caught, you're talking to somebody in a foreign land, they can start snooping through your stuff just like that.
Yeah.
And that's up for vote.
Yeah, we did talk about that a little bit. And, like I said a few minutes ago, the problem is on the face of the law, it seems like a good thing. And then you get snooping into it. And like you said, if you talk to someone who is from a foreign land, then they can start looking into you. And, as Americans, we get our hackles up a little bit when our own country is spying against us or is spying on us or is looking into some of those things. And, Donald Trump says the FBI used this loose law that needed more specifics to spy on him. And unfortunately, Donald Trump said, just kill the FISA Act completely, which I don't think is the answer. I mean, I hate to go against Donald Trump because I'm a big Trump supporter, but I don't think the answer is to just kill the FISA Act. I think that they need to amend it. They need to make sure that it's very clear that it will not be used against American citizens, especially former presidents of the United States.
Well, what's interesting is the Senate and House representative excluded theirself, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Because we've had a couple of those guys being looked up. But, all it is you go before the court and present some evidence. And the FBI say, oh, that's too hard. We just want carte blanche. If we think there's a problem, Joe Blow, and how far can they blow that out of proportion,
Yeah, yeah.
Some guy talking on the radio right now has probably got the FBI listening.
Probably so. Yeah, I haven't looked into that.
Before
lately.
It was, you better take your tin hat off. But nowadays, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thanks for calling, Richard. Appreciate it. It is 9:32 on KDXU. Now we're going to give that book away. Mello's going to answer the phone. This is the last copy. I actually have one at home. I might bring it into work and give that away sometime next week. But this is the last official copy of American Playbook with Clay Travis. We're going to give it away at 673-5890. Give us a call. We'll give you that book. American Playbook with Clay Travis. We'll be back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
We have had a fun week on the Andy Griffin Show this week. Early in the week, Gary Lee Price, world renowned, literally world renowned. He has pieces, sculptures in museums around the world, and he was on the show, and he announced on this show, This was fascinating. Mello, I don't know if you heard this.
Mm-mm.
So I grew up in Texas, but as a teenager, we lived in Salt Lake area, right? And people say, well, what is Salt Lake known for? Obviously, it's, you know, Mormon country, it's the temple, stuff like that. But is there a landmark, is there something big in the Salt Lake Valley that you go, oh, yeah, for, you know, like in Philadelphia, the Love thing or the Liberty Bell, you know, in New York, the Empire State Building used to be the Twin Towers. And, you know, you different areas around the country, they're known for some spectacular thing, Statue of Liberty, you know, in Ellis Island. You know, there wasn't really that thing in Utah. We had the national parks and we had the temples, but was there something? Well, Gary Lee Price announced on the show that Governor Cox has asked them. Now, it's not a done deal yet, but it's close, and they're the biggest. They're waiting for the funding mostly to come through, but they are going to erect, given if they can get the money together, a 305-foot statue at the site of the old prison in Draper Bluffdale area.
Oh,
in Salt Lake County,
the point of the mountain.
And if you think about that height, that is the actual height of the Statue of Liberty. They're going to call it the Statue of Responsibility, and it's not going to be small. 300 feet tall.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a face changer for the state of Utah. And I know there are people who go, well, you know, we don't need that. We don't want, but it's pretty cool, I think.
What would it be, like a person or like?
It would be, I actually have a miniature of it. You can't see it from where you're at, but a hand reaching down to another hand, that grabbing each other by the wrist, kind of like this.
Okay.
And helping them up. It'll be vertical.
Okay.
Helping them up. It comes off of one of Gary Lee Price's statues, in which he has two Native Americans scaling a rock face and one reaching down to help the other.
Okay.
So basically, a man helping man.
I love that, actually.
I think it's going to be fantastic. I know there are, like I said, there are going to be naysayers that say, oh, we don't want to change the face of Utah, or we don't want to be known for that. But I think it would be really cool.
Yeah, I think that sounds really cool. Like, it's not like a place people can go and say, oh, wow, look, Utah does like to help each other. And
yeah,
they're always helping and volunteering.
When when Gary Lee Price originally was commissioned to do the statue, they had talked about putting it on in California on the coast. So it would be Statue of Liberty on one coast and the statue of what they're calling Statue of Responsibility on the other coast. But where they were going to put it in California, they backed out. They changed their mind and decided not to do it. And so instead of California, when Governor Cox found out about it, and the folks in Utah, they're like, well, we'll do it here. You know, nice. If California doesn't want it, we'll take it. So you'll have, like I said, the Statue of Liberty on one coast, and then we're not quite the coast, but out west here, the Statue of Responsibility. I hope it all goes through. They did some artist renderings of it. It's not just going to be a statue. They're going to have a whole kind of responsibility park, and it'll have a museum, and it'll have a fountain, and it'll have some stores, you know, some gift shop type stores. It's going to be really cool if it comes through. I think it will. I hope it will. I want it to.
That sounds really nice. I like that kind of good news. That's my kind of news.
Yeah. By the way, Brenda won the last book, The American Playbook by Clay Travis. So that's pretty cool. And I do have one at home. I have already read it. I'm thinking about bringing it in and giving it out on the air. Why not, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And I did not take it in the bathroom, by the way.
That's gross.
I don't read in the bathroom. It has not been flagged by
Turkish. You don't even take your phone in the bathroom.
No, I do not, no.
That's impressive.
Yes, I do. In fact, have you ever done that? Somebody says, hey, look at this, and they hand you their phone, and I don't know about you, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I don't really want to hold your phone. I don't know where. Actually, I do know where it's been.
I do like to wipe my phone down with, like, disinfectant.
Oh, good for
like
you.
Every week, because I know good I take you. It everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, honestly, I mean, if you think about if every time you go to the bathroom, you wash your hands, right? If you take your phone in the bathroom, shouldn't you wash your phone every time you go to the
That's true. That's true. I'm trying to do better at not taking my phone everywhere, but I do need it for work. So,
there's a story online. Speaking of phones, interesting story. It's about a guy. It's written by a guy rather, or by a lady. By Lenore Skenazzi is her name, and she said, you know, she's long been, and she's the one. She has this website thing that she's putting together called Let Grow. Which the idea behind the Let Grow movement is to try to get kids off of their phones 24/7, to try to get them to go out and do, you know, go play baseball in the backyard or you know, toss the frisbee or, you know, build a treehouse. And, you know, it's you show kids nowadays the movie Sandlot, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And they cannot fathom a world without the internet and a world without social media and a world without smartphones.
Yeah.
And so Lenore wrote this story about screen time and phones. And she said, you know, the problem, the reason kids are on screens is because of us adults.
Right. It's easier to watch kids when they're watching a phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been guilty of that.
I have grandkids and oft times, I don't want to criticize my son and his wife's parenting style, but if they need a break, if they need, you know, to slow life down and try to recover a little bit, guess what they do?
Mm-hmm.
They pop on a video on the either the iPad or on the big screen, and just let that screen babysit the kids for a while.
And in restaurants too, a lot of times people give their kids a phone, which is, you know, I understand you don't want your kids screaming, but they have to have the volume up so loud. Like, that drives me bonkers. I'm like, turn down the volume or give your kids some headphones.
So this Lenore was talking about how can we get kids off phones, and somebody sent her an email, said, hey, listen, do this. Together, plan a trip to a science museum and take your kids to all the exhibits they want to see. And they're like, this is such a great idea. They're going on and on about what a great idea this was. And Lenore said, well, here's the problem. Actually, four-part problems with this. Number one, there's simply no notion that kids have to do something educational all the time. Kids don't want to do it, right? Okay, number two, her idea works one time and one afternoon. Does that mean that you have to plan a trip to the museum every afternoon or the rest of your lives? Gosh, I hope not. Number three, the parent now has a new duty, which is to help organize an outing and then accompany their kid on it. And yes, by the way, it requires a lot of money to do this kind of thing, parking, gas, gift shop, snacks, et cetera, et cetera. And number four, there is zero mention of, heck, kids have entertained themselves forever. Send them outside and they'll come up with something to do. Give them a flip phone or walkie-talkie if you're worried. In other words, why do we as parents have to be the exact answer for the kids being on the screen?
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say we shouldn't be involved in the answer, but we shouldn't be the answer. And she's right. You know, okay, that's a good idea once, right? Or maybe even once a week. All right, we're going to go, you know, on an outing once a week and keep these kids entertained and excited. But you can't do that all the time. You just can't. You know this as a parent.
No, you can't. I think one thing that's helped with our youngest one, because he's been really on his Switch for like the last year and a half since he got it for Christmas, is we got a basketball stand out front. And so he goes out and shoots hoops.
I love that.
Quite
yes.
A bit.
We all did growing up, you know, you'd go out and shoot hoops.
Yep. And then we got him an electric scooter. So him and his dad will go take the scooter and like go down to the gas station and grab a soda or go get an ice cream or just go to the park and ride around on that. So I think those kinds of things are fun to get him out.
One of my favorite activities. And, you know, when I was 12, 13, right, I loved to go out back and play catch with my dad, whether the frisbee or the softball or the football or whatever it was. I mean, that was just, to me, that was heaven, you know. And of course, you know, I love the movie Field of Dreams and Hey Dad, Want to Have a Catch? And, you know, that kind of, I just love that. And when I was 14, my dad got put in as leadership in our church. And the games of catch in the backyard, although they didn't stop completely, that instead of a twice a week activity, it was twice a year activity.
Oh no!
And that was tough on me. And so I would say, you know, a lot of parental responsibility and try to get us off of the screen, get the kids off the screens. Just be available. Just be there. You know, if your kid wants to have a catch or they want to play a board game or whatever, just be there. Back to this article. I think this is interesting. Lenore says this. She says, we've disappeared a normal childhood, complete with adventures, misadventures, boredom, free play, and poking around. Even screen time experts can't imagine kids doing something that is not on a screen, but not a parent-supervised something or other either.
That's true, though, because it's harder to let your kids go out and play because there's some weirdos around.
Are there more weirdos, or are there? Is it the perception that there are more weirdos?
It's probably the perception that there's more weirdos, but then you can also...
I'm not diminishing. There are weirdos out there who do bad things to kids, but are there really that many? I mean, should we be worried about our kids every second of every day?
I don't know. As soon as, like, I start feeling good about things, then I hear somebody, like, post on their Facebook, oh, there was this guy, and he followed my daughter all the way home, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you get, like, feeling more comfortable, and then you hear another story, and then it ignites the fear again.
Yeah. The bottom line on this article, no kids will get off their phones if there is no alternative in place.
That's true.
Alternative might just have to be, hey, you can't be on your phone this time. Go do something else.
Yeah. There's some breakdowns with that, with communication and tantrums that you have to work through to get to there, but it's great in theory.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know. You know, the funny thing is I raised my kids. My kids are all raised now. My youngest is 20. I was right on the edge of all that. I had one son who had something like 10,000 texts in a month. But that was before social media really went crazy. So for him, it was all about texting, which I can't even fathom. 10,000 in a month means 300 a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Now, it was sent and received. So he didn't send all those, but he was involved in 300 plus texts per day.
Well, if you've been on a group chat, then you understand where that probably came from.
Yeah, perhaps. But but for me to say, I know what it's like to have my kids involved in social media and on the screens all the time. I can't say that because I just miss it. You have a young one at home.
I do.
And you gave us, I think, again, a couple of really cool things that you're doing. But there is a war coming up for you, a battle.
Yeah.
When everybody has their kids on social media or and your kid isn't, or maybe you let them do some of it and not all of it, or whatever. You're going to have to fight that, and it's not going to be easy.
No, he got mad at me last night because I was doing one of my videos for my Instagram. And he was making a ton of noise. He was bouncing on this squeaky thing, and I was just trying to finish this up. And I was like, stop it. And he's like, I think Mom cares more about posting her videos than me. I was like,
guilt. Guilt.
Mom guilt, that hurt. I was like, no, that's just an annoying noise. Stop.
One of the things I used to tell my kids, and I'm going to go to break on this thought, and my kids, every one of them can attest that I have said this several times on occasion. When your kid says something like, I'm bored, or can you do this, you know, I always used to say to them, look, I'm your parent. I will care for you. I will love you. I will give you food. I will give you shelter. I am not the entertainment committee.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
I got 5 minutes left. If you want to chime in today, 673-5890. You can text me at 467-5842. I got Michael sent me a picture of the world's, I believe it's the world's oldest living creature, right, Michael? A tortoise named Jonathan is 191 years old. 191. Mellow. I don't know that I want to live that long.
That is a long time to be on the ground crawling around.
You think about what's happened in the last 191 years.
Wow.
Let's see. 191 would put me as 2024. So that would put me in what, 1800 and... I don't know.
That's a math question. I don't do those in public. 60
or 70 or something like that.
Yeah.
like about the time of the Civil War.
Wow,
that's an old tortoise.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. I didn't know they lived that long.
Yeah, there's a picture from the late 1800s of this tortoise.
Wow.
That's amazing, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
All right, again, 673-5890 if you want to weigh in. 467-5842 if you would like to text in. I think I just got a text. And, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. I do, it is a good reminder. Marianne texted me and said, hey, thanks for the article. The photo gallery of Art Around the Corner sculptures. You can go to 890kdxu.com and read about the and look at the pictures of all the sculptures that are in St. George now. Over, I think, 32 of them or something.
It's so cool downtown. I love it. And I really like all the painted walls, like with like St. George or just like art murals. It really just makes it a beautiful, beautiful community.
All right, I've got 3 minutes. I want to get this in. Article of the week. This is the title is The Character Trait of Competence. And the story is written by Patrick Carroll on FEE.org. That's the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org. I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs to close out the show today. When most people think of character, there is a list of attributes or traits that comes readily to mind. Some of the more common ones might be honesty, responsibility, patience, perseverance, loyalty, and courage. These are lofty attributes indeed, and it's a shame that they seem to get little more than lip service from most people. But while these and many others are justly celebrated, there is one character trait that deserves far more notoriety than it often gets, and that is the trait of competence. So competence is, how do you define competence? Competence means being good at something, right?
Right.
Being practiced, worked on something. Some people are naturally good at things, but then they don't, you know, they don't explore that. They don't take advantage of that. But generally speaking, if you're going to be competent at something, that means that you've worked on it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you think about the opposite of competence is incompetence, that is, if somebody says you're incompetent, that's a pretty bad insult.
That's rude.
Yeah. So, yeah, in short, being a good person is learning to become a competent person. I love this quote. This is from H.L. Mencken. He said, of all the human qualities, the one I admire the most is competence. A tailor who is really able to cut and fit a coat seems to me an admirable man. And by the same token, a university professor who knows little or nothing of the thing he presumes to teach seems to be me a fraud and a rascal. Don't we admire people that are competent, that are good at what they do? I think we do. I think I do. Oh, I know I do.
I enjoy watching just dumb things. Like, I watch a lot of Instagram, and I like watching the dumb things that people are really good at. That it's just satisfying to watch somebody start something and then finish it with just such competence.
Absolutely. You have a little, is it Instagram following with your something that you're good at? You're competent at organizing things.
Right.
That's what you're good at.
Yeah.
I love that you celebrate that and that people, apparently 20,000 strong, right?
Almost. I'm getting there.
Like that you're competent at that as well.
But I also had to be competent at collecting things first, so I had an opportunity to get it organized.
I don't know if that's admirable or not, the competence at collecting things. But certainly when you see someone who is skilled at something, though, even, you know, I mean, you go from the things we love, like professional sports. But if you go right down to, I mean, if you go to a chocolate shop and have a chocolatier who can make an especially good piece of chocolate, that's competence. Yeah. That is a trait that is underrated, but something that we should aspire to. Final paragraph from this Patrick Carroll article. So you want to be a good person, you want to become virtuous, then start getting good at things.